Blog Talk Radio.
What is Ulu and what is it to do? Stay tuned for part two of that discussion. Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversations about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number one on your keypad when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you're on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage. Click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. You'll be at the Block Talk Radio site at that time. My name is Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Baba Hakima, one of the founders of Ulu. Peace, Baba Hakima. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great, sis, and your voice is coming in loud and clear.
Thank you, sir.
Yes.
So, So on the 24th of June, we had part one of this discussion, what is Uru and what is it to do. Baba Hakima, would you like to refresh our memories a little bit before we get into part two tonight?
Yes. Of course, we were only able to go through a little over half of the material that we covered, and we specifically chose to use the 10-point appeal and plan of Uru as a guide to take us through the discussion to answer the question, what is Uru and what is it to do? So this evening we're going to go through, hopefully you'll read number one through six, and then we'll start at number seven and go to through the 10 points. But what I wanted to do is to set the tone, so to speak. And this is a repeat from what we did previously. And this is a what-if scenario. And essentially what I want to get the family to do is to think about this particular what-if. And, of course, most of us remember that in 1995, more than a million black men assembled in Washington, D.C. for the Black the Millions Man's March. And so the what-if scenario is this. What if at that particular occasion, again, more than a million black men assemble at one place and at one time, and we know that they were supported by family and friends and comrades who didn't come. But what if the leadership at that time had advanced this proposal to the more than a million men who assemble? And this is the proposal. And this really gets to what we're talking about today with what is Uru and what is Uru to do. So this is the proposal, the what-if proposal. What if those million old men, young men, middle-aged men were enticed or encouraged to go back to their home communities and to do whatever they needed to do to rake and scrape $1,000 each, and they had a year to do it, so that there would be a pool of money, a reservoir of fund to stimulate our global economic rise. I would say that I'm confident, very confident, that more than half of the brothers and sisters, well, the brothers who assembled in Washington, D.C. in 95 would have been able to come back with that $1,000 each. So 500,000 times $1,000 each, we can do the math. But one of the caveats that I would put in place, that there would be two things that everybody knew that the money could not be used for.
Okay.
The first thing that it could not be used for is to give loans to businesses, even in the black community. The second thing it could not do is give money to charity. And most of us would think that that's what it's for, is to stimulate business development through loans and to support programs that service our people in the community. So, but again, these are two things that could not happen based on this scenario. The reason being is that the money would be used only, well, in two ways, for a small percentage would be used for administrative purposes,
mm-hmm.
but the bulk of the resources would be used to open and run co-op businesses that were to create a surplus or a profit.
Mm-hmm.
And from the profit, and some of the businesses would be financial services businesses, from the profits and from the businesses that are established through the fund, then you can support a loan to black-owned businesses, and you can give to charity and endowment. So the capacity to stimulate the economy through loans or grants, you want to have, but the fund would be set up first to build and run co-op businesses only. And from the success of those businesses, then you satisfy the need in the community. But you satisfy more needs. You know, we'll talk about those as we go. So we used this scenario the last time we talked, and then we went through the 10-point appeal and plan to kind of show the master plan. And so if you would be so kind just to run us through the first 6 points, I may make a comment or two, but we're just going to run through them quickly and get back to number 7, where we will pick up and finish the our going through the 10-point appeal and plan to answer the broader question, what is ULU and what is ULU to do?
Okay. Number one is, as black people, we take full responsibility for the economic destiny of our communities and nations.
Yeah,
number
I'll just say again, the reason number one is important because it clarifies the intent, and it clarifies who's responsible. The intent is to control the economics of our community, and the responsibility is on us. So it's important that we point that out right at the beginning. Go to number two now.
Number two, black persons and black institutions, especially the black church, join together as members in a large-scale cooperatively owned business enterprise to pool our resources.
Now, the important point here is that ULU is populated by members that are both individuals and institutions. So that's critical. So when we think about the platform that we're building, it's not only individuals, there are institutions.
Right.
As a matter of fact, there are some institutions that have membership with ULU who have more members in their organization than ULU may ever have. Go to number three.
Okay, number three, this cooperatively owned business enterprise is reflective of our unique culture and interest in the world.
You know, hopefully that's self-explanatory. So let's go
on to number four. The governance and legal form of the cooperative accommodate democratic principles. One member, one vote, with elected leadership.
And even though we're talking about a business formation, people don't vote with their dollars, they vote with their membership, and everyone is equal, only one membership, and thusly only one vote. Even organizations or institutions that are members only have one vote.
Okay.
Next.
Number five, only members of the cooperative and not the public have the opportunity to secure membership units equity in the business enterprise with the potential to amass billions of dollars for community development.
Okay, we can go on to the next one.
And number six, where we left off, the cooperative focuses on opening and operating businesses in local communities that, one, provide needed goods and services, two, create new jobs, three, stimulate additional business activity, and four, yield a fair profit. And that's how far we got last month.
Good, so, and hopefully that's, and again, ULU is a business formation, and wherever possible, and the intent is clear, we intend to create a surplus so that we can plow that surplus back into the enterprise and grow. Eventually hundreds and eventually thousands of businesses. But you have to create a surplus in
for
order
sure.
to plow it back in and grow. All right, so
mm-hmm.
we're starting on number seven afresh this time, and so if you would read number seven, and we'll go into it a little bit more detail.
Okay, number seven, the cooperative is driven to duplicate and expand into hundreds and eventually thousands of businesses, all owned and controlled by the collective.
Shay, and I guess I just mentioned that. But part of our master plan is to have co-ops in many local communities. We have an institution, a core institution that we call our base collectives. It's like a chapter of ULU members in a city or town. And in those communities, with the leadership and energy and ingenuity of the local members in the UBC, we want to have multiple businesses in the local area. Most of them will be small, especially initially. Later on, some of them may grow and become medium-sized. And strategically, we may have large businesses in different areas. And the majority of our businesses, we think, will end up being acquisitions, businesses that may already have a track record in the community, but for whatever reason are up for sale, or the owners don't have family or friends to carry on the business, and rather than some successful businesses just going out of business because the owners are going to move on, you know, we would be in a position to do that. And even medium and large businesses very often are acquisitions, not necessarily startups. Usually when people think of new businesses, they think of startups. I'll just give you an example. It's maybe not the best example, but it's one that I'm familiar with. In Milwaukee, Wisconsin, in the 70s, in the late 60s or early 70s, there was an opportunity to purchase a brewery producing beer. And the black community pooled its resources and purchased it. So it was an acquisition. And they purchased the services of the brewmaster, who wasn't a part of the community, but nobody in the community knew how to brew beer. So, you know, it was necessary for continuity to hire that. So, so again, we are driven to build a platform, a strategy, to pool our resources and to build hundreds and eventually thousands of businesses. And we can look at other communities in the world that have been successful in doing that. The Italy, and I dare not try and mention the name of the region, but Bologna is the capital city of the region. There are thousands of co-ops, and some of them are part of federations. So, and in Spain, of course, we talk about that, in Canada. So we're not talking about doing anything new, but we're talking about doing something new in our community, and in our culture. So, yes, we're driven to duplicate. And we have a system of duplication. We call it, I won't go into that. But there is a strategy for units of ULU, UBCs, growing to a certain level of maturity and then dividing. And then that growth then divides again. So in addition to bringing on new UBCs or new chapters, there's also a strategy of chapters that have been established or that would be established, growing to a certain level in size and proficiency that it naturally divides and becomes multiple units. So that's what I would say about number seven.
Okay. We can go on to number eight now. The net profits from overall cooperative success are used to, one, reinvest, two, for the distribution of grants and endowments, and three, direct returns or dividends to member owners of the cooperative.
Yes, and we think that that we need to have this kind of allocation of net profits. The primary one, of course, is reinvesting so we can grow. And but we also want to be associated with and tap into what's happening in the local community. So each business enterprise that we establish, we want to have it connected to a local nonprofit. Our preference is a nonprofit related to our youth. An African-centered school or another program. And so as the community aids in bringing these businesses online and growing them, we want a good part of the benefits or some part of the benefit to stay in the local community. Of course, the salaries will stay in the local community. The contracts that we have with vendors will stay in the community. But we also want a percentage of the net profits to be dedicated to a nonprofit. And this is continuous. In other words, it's not just a one-time grant or gift. We want the business to quarterly, semi-annually, or yearly, whatever the cycle is to contribute to the growth and development of a nonprofit in the local community. And again, I'll repeat, we intend to have multiple businesses in local areas. So every time we open a business, we want to partner with a nonprofit. So there's an opportunity to benefit more than just one nonprofit as we increase the number of businesses that we would have.
Okay.
And and what's the other part of that number seven? I'm sorry, we're on number eight right now, right?
We're on number eight, yeah.
Yeah, so profits would be divided between reinvestment.
The profit reinvestment.
And that's the primary thing for grants and endowments.
For the distribution of, and direct returns.
Right.
To member owners of the cooperative.
The number three point that you made, that direct returns to member owners, that's key. A lot of times in our community, we're so enamored with nonprofits where people are encouraged to volunteer and to contribute and to donate and to give, but there's almost never an opportunity for that to be reversed. In other words, monies or other rewards coming back to the people who made it happen in the first place. In that this is a business enterprise for members who contribute equity for the building of this global system, when we are in fact able to point to surplus or profits, then a percentage of that, a reasonable percentage, nothing that's going to make all of us kabillionaires, but a reasonable portion of that should come back to the members who purchased units or who contributed capital to fund these operations. And what it does, it creates a permanent income stream for these institutions and individuals in the community who see the vision and who contribute. It's not, again, it's not something that it's going to make millionaires, but to have a few dollars coming back on a continuous basis. And in our situation, it's permanent in that your equity can be willed to your heirs, passed down to future generations. Of course, there's a criteria is that those persons qualify and become members. So it is an opportunity for the brothers and sisters and the organizations and institutions who make it happen to receive on a continuous basis from the success of the overall operation.
I think that's important because people, well, I think most of us are not used to getting anything back when we, you know, like work with a business.
Right.
We just get, you know, if we get a paycheck, we get a paycheck, that's it. We don't get profit sharing. We don't get, we make it happen, but we don't share the rewards. Or we help make it happen and don't share the rewards.
Okay, so. And what that does, once it gets started, it produces an energy that fuels the growth because it becomes known now that if you help build success, then success helps you as well. And not only the nonprofits, not only the jobs, but the institutions and individuals who contribute equity have an opportunity. So it's part of the marketing strategy, but it's it seems logical to me, just as you stated, that if we're successful, in fact, in producing surplus, then it's only fair that some of that surplus, and of course there's some stipulations in terms of time. You know, it's not anything. Let's say we're already into profit and someone joins today and contributes capital today. They're not going to receive a return right away. There's a, a time period for their contributions to mature, so to speak. And so there are some stipulations and controls so that it spreads the it spreads the benefits out in a fair and equitable way, and it rewards the persons who first stepped in and got the ball rolling. And so, again, with stipulations. Thank you.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, number nine, the large-scale cooperatively owned, business enterprise functions as a catalyst and central element in building and sustaining the new black economy, one that gives power to our people.
Ashe.
Yeah.
Yeah, if we can imagine from, you know, humble beginnings where we are, then thinking now and planning and doing what's necessary. And that we've already talked about it, building multiple businesses that are linked together, not all the same type. Some of them may be in agriculture or in retail or in construction or transportation or hospitality, mining. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. If there is a need and we can build a business enterprise to fulfill that need to create mm-hmm. jobs and has a good potential for generating a surplus, then we want to do that. And we want to then connect these businesses. And a lot of times what we don't see are businesses that emerge as services to already existing businesses that don't interface with the public. So when we think about the large-scale business enterprise, some of the businesses will be linkages and services internally. For instance, I'll give you a good example of one that at least our old heads know about. It used to be years ago if you bought a legal pad, I'm talking about paper, you know, a spiral a notebook. One of the companies that was big in the industry was Mead Packaging. And so Mead became a name. But you don't hear of Mead today. I mean, the paper products to the consumers you don't hear of. But they're still a multi-million dollar, multi-billion dollar corporation. They deal with packaging. And they sell to manufacturers very elaborate packaging for their goods and services. I know about the company. I used to service them, you know, as a provider of services myself. But when we talk about large scale business enterprises, we're not only talking about again the businesses that we can see and feel in local communities, but we're also talking about the businesses that that service the group. So this large-scale business enterprise functions as the catalyst. We stir the pot because everything that ULU builds, our first instincts are to do business with other black businesses for the products, goods, and services that that business needs. So it stimulates the local economy. It strengthens the local economy. It strengthens the regional and national and eventually the global economy. And the enterprise that we envision acts as a central core element because ultimately we're going to have to put in motion and put into play an economy, not just businesses, but those businesses in sync with each other, linked to each other, and linked to other businesses, already existing businesses that we don't have control of, but that provide needed goods and services as well. And so the platform that we're building will act as a central platform for the or central element for building and sustaining what has to come into being, the new black economy. It's not enough for us to want to have more businesses in our communities and for those businesses to succeed independent of each other, because that's what we have now. If you did a survey or Google search, there's over 60,000 black-owned businesses in and around the Atlanta metropolitan area. 60,000. Most of them are just on paper. A good number of them are sole proprietors, just one person, and hire nobody. Many of them do hire two, three, four, five persons, but the number of them that hire 30, 40, 50 persons or more are very few. But 60,000 black-owned businesses, essentially 60,000 entities separate and distinct from each other, very little cross-pollination. We've got to create a scenario where we're doing business within a container, within an economy. Yes, it will be what you would call a secondary economy or an alternative economy. That's where we'll identify it as that in the beginnings. But ultimately, it must emerge as a part of a global African economy. Right. An economy, in every scenario that I can think of, serves the interests of a particular group. And so our economy, again, serves the interests of our people. And so it's important that we have the vision of creating not just the businesses, not just the jobs, not just the funding of the nonprofits, but all of this in an economy. We talk about the garbage return, and we use the whirlwind, and Garvey said he would return in the whirlwind, but we take the liberty to describe that in economic terms. And on our website, if you look at one of our elements in the About Us tab, you'll see Garvey's return and the elements of creating this economy. So number nine is critical. That we think in those terms. It's almost impossible to grow big and to grow substantial if that's not your intent. And if you're not careful to put in place the tools and the elements necessary for that kind of growth. So, so that's number nine.
Going back to what you were saying about, like, the people supplying things to, it's like the background company that supports the front-facing business. You know, my mind works on the health. Well, I call it the disease management system. And so we think of hospitals. There's an economy within the hospital, not just the doctors and the nurses, but the people that do the tests and the ones that provide the test, you know, capsules or whatever. But then you have the people that provide the beds, the people that provide the sheets, the people that provide the lamps, the furniture for the waiting room, and all these. And when you walk into a hospital, look around, and everything you see, the paintings on the wall, somebody provided that to the hospital. So it is helpful for us to think in terms of when we walk into an establishment, what's behind that which we see, or what, you know, look for what we don't see and identify another need, I think. So we're ready for number 10, which is Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative LLC serves as the aforementioned model.
And it's kind of a repeat of number 9 in a way, but we definitely want the reader, the listener, the member, the potential member, to look at ULU as a model and something that we construct. Amos Wilson made a statement in some of his writings, but I've heard him lecture as well. Mm-hmm. He says that an idea is one of the most tangible things that you can ever have. A good idea.
Okay.
A good mm-hmm. idea is one of the most tangible things that you can ever have. And so we want to stress that the idea that Ulu would be this model, this mm-hmm. Dynamic that we come together to pool our energies, our resources to build, and that it's large enough, strong enough, endowed enough in many ways mm-hmm. to put us in a position where we're able to state and, in fact, protect our interests as African mm-hmm. people in the world. So we see Ulu as this model. Now, obviously, you know, there may be other models, but it's sad to say at this point in 2021 that I don't see, maybe you see or maybe other people see, I don't mm-hmm. see models being created with this kind of vision, this kind of mission, this kind of vision for African people controlling the economy of our peoples and lands. There's a good example, right. and as a good example in another community in terms of the Chinese, with mm-hmm. their Belt and Road Initiative, where on some of the maps, they have the whole planet mapped out in terms of their resurgence back onto
okay.
the scene.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not suggesting that we as African people look at the globe in terms of mapping it for economic dominance, but certainly we need to look at our communities and our lands globally mm-hmm. as being territories and lands and peoples where our desire and the fruits of our labor take us towards being sovereign, take us towards being self-determined, take us towards being whole and secure.
Yes.
And so, but that model, and you first have to, of course, and we're repeating ourselves, but you first have to have the intent, and that's number one in the 10-point appeal and plan, and understand that ultimately it's we have to develop ourselves the tools and the other devices, the plans, the systems, the businesses necessary to fuel this model towards success. Now, I want mm-hmm. to apologize to the audience. If brothers and sisters who are listening via the internet or listening on your phones, if you go to our website and look at the 10-point appeal and plan, you'll see that number 9 is there's a problem. We recently launched a new website, and I'm just learning today that on our website, number 9 is not what should be there. So I apologize, and I want to indulge the family that is soon start this evening and get with the sister that keeps our website to
mm-hmm.
get in her possession the proper files, because if
okay.
you go there, you won't see what we just read for number 9. And, of course,
okay.
there's a saying that the road to success is always under construction. So, you know, hopefully we'll be forgiven for that error. And I'm not sure how long it's been up. Hopefully it's only been up since the new website. And I hope it wasn't on the old website. But we will make that correction hopefully tomorrow or the next day.
Okay. Barbara, we have a caller. So I'm going to open the line and let them make their statement or ask their question. Caller with the last four digits, 7188, please state your name, where you're calling from, and make your comment or ask your question. Thank you.
Yes, my name is Stanley Scott. I'm with the African American Economic Recovery Think Tank. And my first question, it's a two-part question here. How long have y'all been around?
We've been around. We got started, and of course, we know you. We remember you, and you're consistent, and I commend you. We got started in 2011 as a think tank, and we officially launched in June of 2013 as an LLC. So we've been around as the institution that we are now, and we're probably going to morph and make some additional changes. So we've been around as the formation that we are since June of 2013.
Yes, okay. Part two of my question here, when can we have a open discussion? But it's my concern here because I have some quite a few questions, and I don't know if we have the time for it. This is a one-hour event, right?
That's right. Why don't we do this? You're in Jacksonville, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And why don't we do this? Why don't you send us your email address and maybe a phone number, and you have ours, the number and the email address, and let's set up a Zoom session so that we can see each other and talk, and we'll record it so that we can be clear. And and I know one thing about you. You've been consistent. I remember you from the time that we met at the Shrines of the Black Madonna. That may have been 2015 or 16. So, yeah,
correct. We've
been around. And
That's good.
Yeah. Well, but part of what I want to share with the family is that if when we met in 2015 or 16, you would have told us that we would be where we are today, I would have said that you were incorrect. We were growing fast. We had some momentum, and of course, we had the quote-unquote pandemic or plandemic or whatever. But before that, we had a business that failed, and hopefully everybody knows that, and we don't want to hide that. But the lessons learned and still being learned are significant. And when you and I talk and invite other people to that call, we'll share lessons learned and things that have been put in place to minimize negative results in the future. So thank you, Brother Stanley.
Well, I'd like to close on this part. I support what you just said in volume as far as I'm concerned. And also, we are able to help each other in a big way. So let's not waste too much time. Let's learn from our lessons and move forward because right here in Jacksonville, African Americans spent close to $2 billion of disposable income. And you see it's across the country in the African American community. And we are not able to help ourselves. We can't feed ourselves. We can't do anything. And that's a crime shame. So the point I'm going to say to you once again, that I am respect what you just said.
Yeah.
It speaks volumes. Because, I mean, you can deal when you're dealing with honest people, ethical people. And I do, what you said to me, not often that I hear it across the country, people be in denial of the situation. But y'all are in one of the greatest places in the world, in Atlanta, correct?
Yes.
Y'all can do a lot of great things there because whatever we have here, whether I say $2 billion of disposable income, y'all got almost $20 billion of disposable income or more. And we're not tapping into that. So I would definitely look forward to talking, setting up a Zoom call to show what we can do to change our paradigm. Because there's many opportunities in our community, in the African-American community, in the United States and around the world, where we can network with each other and do some wonderful things.
Beautiful.
But one thing, I do respect what you said and love what you said and respect it to the utmost.
Thank you. Thank you, Brother Scott. Make sure you send a number and an email right away.
I'm on it already.
Take care, brother.
Peace. Thank you. Baba Hakima, there is someone else. I'm going to open that up. Okay. Now, for this party, I show all ones. I guess you know who you are. Please state your name, where you're calling from, and make your comment or ask your questions.
That's sure.
Hello?
Okay, Brother Kevlon, can you hear
it? Yeah.
Yeah, it may be me. I don't know what shows up on the thing.
I'm trying
to correct that. Well, I apologize. But Brother Kevlon from Richmond, Virginia, we call it Prosser City after Gabriel Prosser. I'm glad the brother mentioned lessons learned. I was part of an organization. We were half a $1 million. And then the great man, such as the brother who's been speaking, became an ancestor.
Mm.
And the organization collapsed.
Wow.
And I was reminded of this movie I saw, Battle Ideas, where the guy said, you got to learn two positions ahead of yourself. It's just like the President of the United States. The Vice President, the President Pro Tem, and the Speaker of the House knows the President's position. So hopefully the brother will be with us a long time. But what do y'all have in place if a great mind such as yourself were no longer on this board? What do y'all have in place to make sure the organization doesn't fold? When you talk about learning from a past experience, that's what happened to an organization I was in, so it can't happen. So what do y'all have in place for that, or have you even considered that?
Well, what we have is an elected board of directors. I just happen to be one who was elected, but there's 9 members. Each year, we elect 3 new members. I probably will not stand for election when my turn is over. I'll be a volunteer or worker. But many of the persons who are elected and serve 3 years, they are still around, but the main thing is we get new energy, and that those new people, for instance, the 3 persons who were elected in our last term, they are learning from the older ones participating in committees. And so as we build, the more dependable units or elements of what we are building will be the process, the systems that we set up, and not the individuals. And so we want to build an institution with systems that we are system dependent, not individual dependent. And so we're moving in that direction, and I'll be 77 in August. So you definitely don't want to depend on me. But there are brothers and sisters in Ulu who are more capable than myself. I've just been around a few months or years. But, yeah, we have an elected process, one member, one vote with elected leadership, and it's set up to be perpetual. So thank you, Brother Kabelon, for that question.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother.
Baba Hakim, that we have no one else waiting right now. So what I wanted to ask you myself is how do people who have now heard the 10-point appeal, how the 10-point plan, how do they go about joining ULU and becoming part of this great process?
Right. What I want to encourage everyone to do, not just by yourself, but to bring your comrades, your friends, your families to come to ULU and join. Once you become a member, there's an opportunity for you to also bring minors into ULU. My grandchildren are all members of ULU, and some of them are below 18. So we have a process where minors can join, but an existing member must sponsor them. Go to usliftingus.com, click the Join tab, and fill out the application. You must attach a $50 payment with it. And what we will do is follow up with you to make sure you understand what you're involved in. As a matter of fact, you cannot join ULU without going through an approval process. And then once we've made the decision that you are a person of Black African descent, that you understand what you're getting involved in, then we'll click the Approve tab. But if you decide that you don't want to be a member of ULU, or we decide that you're not a fit because you don't qualify, and we click the Deny tab, it instantly refunds your $50. And so we encourage everyone to go ahead and a leap of faith and then do your due diligence, you know, afterwards. But, you know, there's enough information on the website so you can get a sense of what you're joining. You can send us emails. You can phone us. We have this show every week. We're building a video platform called New Reality, so you'll be able to see us online. But go to our YouTube page, our Facebook page, our website, and I want to encourage everyone to become a member. And not just to become a member and be passive. Like Brother Scott, he wants to share ideas and to be impactful. And so, I appreciate it. What's the billionaire's name? Jeff Bezos, with owner of Amazon the other day.
Amazon.
Went into space.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever
mm-hmm.
his name is. But he made the statement. He said, everything starts small. Amazon, mm-hmm. you know, he's listened to some of his speeches, and they're on the floor wrapping packages in an apartment. Started
wow.
Amazon.
Okay.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's this giant. Same with Walmart. So, but the important thing is our intent and the values that undergird what it is that we're about. We're not about exploitation, which, you know, predatory capitalism, we're not about that. We're about a group-owned enterprise where the surplus is shared equally among the people who make it happen. But the primary benefit are creating new jobs, providing goods and services to our community, and stimulating the economy of our local communities. So the question of Grant Yan to answer, I would encourage everyone to step up to the plate and become a member. And then once you become a member, there are ways that you can acquire an equity position in ULU. You can do it all at once, or you can do it incrementally. And there's no compulsion to do it at any, start it at any time or to finish it at any time. But it's from the equity contributions that members make that we fund the organization and fund the new businesses. And I'll just say this. We are incubating a couple of new business ventures as we speak. So look forward to hearing more and more about those in the coming weeks and months. I think we may have gone over our time.
No, we're just at 9 o'clock. We're just at 10
okay.
o'clock. Okay. So
okay.
We want to thank
everyone
for joining us this evening. We'll be back next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock Eastern Time with another installment of Dare to Win. Thank you, Baba Hakima.
And thank you, Sister
Jill, for joining
Jill.
Us. Okay. Peace.
Peace.
Yeah.